But tonight, we're going to talk about money. One of those subjects that the church seldom likes to hear talked about, except maybe the elders. But we're not going to talk about money the way you usually would hear money talked about. We're continuing our little series on how to study the Bible more effectively. And one of the many, many illustrations I know of that help us realize how important it is to use some Bible resources as we're reading the Bible is the subject of money. The subject of money is mentioned many times in the Bible, Old Testament and New, and yet they're using a money system that we don't know anything about. I know when we first moved to San Diego County in Southern California, as you got down closer and closer to the border with Mexico, you started discovering that in some of the stores, especially the small stores and so forth, that in the cash registers, even on this side of the border, the merchants kept American dollars and American change, but also Mexican pesos and Mexican change. And that was even more especially the case over on the other side of the border. You go down there, there was no problem at all taking American dollars or quarters or nickels or half dollar pieces or whatever you had, and they would gladly take it. They could even give you change in American money if you needed it. But we don't have that luxury when we talk about the money they used in the Bible. And yet, many important lessons in the New Testament and the teachings of Jesus in particular revolve around money. Not so much his teaching about how we should give and be generous and all of that, but just revolved around the system of money they had. And often, part of the lesson turns on knowing something about the money that they had. And the two most common kind of books we can use to help us, besides just reading the Bible itself, in understanding about this money is either what's called a Bible background book, where they just look at a wide variety of subjects, including money and such in the Bible, or a Bible dictionary. And so what I've chosen to do tonight is to make a copy out of one of my Bible dictionaries, the article in there on money. So I'll just have Ed help me out here and pass that out to you. This is 5 pages long, so I'm not expecting you during the, you know, our time here to read all of that. Hopefully it will inspire you enough that you will. You'll find the article starts out by saying that in the oldest part of the Old Testament, we really don't find much mention of money per se. Seems like most trading and so forth took place by means of the barter system. But then by the time we get at least as far as Abraham, we find that they were actually using some form of money part of the time. Abraham, when he was buying the piece of property that he wanted to bury his wife Sarah on, he paid for that with money and various other references and so forth. And then throughout the Old Testament, even in the laws of Moses, it gives us some commands and so forth that have to do with money. But we just want to pay attention to the New Testament part. And so if you turn to page 3 in that handout, just point a few things out to you. I'm going to hold that. And then we're going to hear a few things out of the Scripture, out of the New Testament, that I think will help us see the value of going beyond just what the Bible itself says and try to understand what it is saying. In Matthew chapter 20, now it's interesting to me that Matthew, more than any of the other gospel writers of the four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Matthew talks about money more than the others. In fact, I think I could safely say that there are more mentions and references to money and stories about money in Matthew than there are in the stories of all the other three Gospels put together. Now, why do you think that might be so? I realize the Scriptures don't tell us why, but why do you think it might be that Matthew would talk about money and remember stories about money more than the others would? His profession had been as a tax collector, up until the time he became a disciple. And so I think stories like that would stick with him. Just like, my antenna, so to speak, go up every time someone starts talking about computers. And for others, those of you who have worked in the oil fields or in the oil business in one way or the other, when you hear someone start talking about that, you have a little bit of a special affinity to that. Ladies who have a hobby of quilting or sewing or cooking, so you tend to hear those stories more than others do and remember them if you hear someone else talking about it. I think that's exactly what happens with Matthew. And as we're looking in Matthew, there's so many references there, but in Matthew chapter 20, he tells a story, or he repeats the story Jesus tells in Matthew chapter 20. It says in verse 1, "The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard." So here we have a man who's got a vineyard obviously ready to be harvested. The grapes are ripe. It's time to bring them in. So he hires these day laborers early in the morning. He tells them, "Look, if you'll work for me all day, I'll pay you a denarius." And off they go into the vineyard to do their work. About the third hour, if early in the morning was daybreak, say 6 o'clock in the morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour, that would be noon, and the ninth hour, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and did the same thing. And about the 11th hour, that would be just 1 hour before sunset, because their days had 12 hours, since they used a sundial, it would always have 12 hours. Now, in the summer, the hours were longer than in the winter, but there still were just 12 of them. And so he goes out the 11th hour, just 1 hour left until sunset, and work would have to end. He went out and found still others standing around, and he asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. And he said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." And when evening came, the sun sets, the work is over, the workers have come back in. The owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." So he's got to pay the people who started working at the 11th hour first and end up with the one that started at 6 o'clock in the morning. "The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. And when they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. 'These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour,' they said, 'and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day.' But he answered one of them, 'Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?' So the last will be first and the first will be last." Now, in all the lessons here, we seldom pay much attention actually to the amount of money itself. We just notice that those who just came in at the end and just worked a short time got the same amount as those that came at the first. And usually the application we make of that is that those who come into the kingdom early in their life and serve God faithfully all of their life, at the end of their life, when we stand before God, they will receive a crown of life, an eternal life. And those who come to Christ late in their life, and maybe only just Christians, sometimes even just a few weeks or months before they pass into eternity, they also receive what? The same thing, a crown of life, eternal life. And on top of that, we know that there are those who suffer persecution and the loss of many things, including loved ones and everything they own, and maybe all sorts of other things, and they receive the same thing. And then there are those who just sort of sail through life. We have it pretty easy as Christians, and yet when we stand before God at the end, what do we receive? The same thing. Everybody receives the same thing. And that's the lesson that we usually draw, and I think that is the lesson Jesus was teaching there. But what about this money they're being paid? You have a denarius in your pocket? I don't. I have a replica of one on my bookshelf back in Lubbock. But a denarius was such a common part of their monetary system in that day and time, it makes some sense for us to try to find out about this. Now, back to your printout from the dictionary. It says there on page 3, about halfway down, it starts with Roman coins. That's how that paragraph begins. It says, Roman coins, common in New Testament times, showed a profound Greek influence. The Greeks were among some of the earliest peoples who had a regular coinage system. Before them, we do find various nations who would have what would amount to coins. It was usually based on the weight or the value of the silver or the gold that was in the coin. So the bigger the coin, the more it was worth. And, you know, even in America, for a time when we were on the gold standard, that was true. It was supposed to be that the weight of the gold coin was actually the value that it carried. We've changed away from that. It was a Greek, so that sort of moved away from that a little bit and started this idea that the government stands behind the value of the coin, not the weight of the coin itself automatically. And the Romans were influenced then by that as they gradually spread out around the Mediterranean perimeter and established their empire throughout that part of the world. And it says that these Roman coins showed that Greek influence, including even some that were minted by Herod the Great, the Herod of the New Testament that killed the babies in Bethlehem and so forth, and by his sons. They've even found coins that bear the name of one or more of his sons. But it says, but because of the second commandment, which prohibited graven images, the coins displayed only traditional stylized pictures. However, they did include the date of issue. What the writer of this article is saying, that coins that were commonly used in the Bible land, Judea, Galilee, and so forth, they were very careful, the Romans not wanting to antagonize the Jews any more than they already were doing without even trying, were careful to only bring coins in there and circulate coins officially as a government that might bear the image of the emperor, but would not bear the image of any idol or any god that the Romans worshipped. They were very careful. There were coins minted by the Romans that had the goddess Diana or Artemis on it and Zeus and so forth, but those were not issued and circulated in Judea and Galilee because the Jews would find that highly offensive to have to use a coin that had an idol on it. But they would use, begrudgingly, coins that might have the image of the emperor on it, or even of Herod himself. And so that's what it's telling us there. That's an important thing to know. That's going to come up in a story that we hear about Jesus later. It also told us in the paragraph just before where we're reading here that, actually several paragraphs up, the second one up at the top of the page, we won't read it, but just to say the Jewish aristocracy or Jewish leadership had decided that in the temple they would only accept coins for paying the temple tax that had been minted in Tyre. Apparently they had actually hired a mint, a company that made coins in Tyre, to make special temple tax coins. These coins had a value of two denarius. So it'd be worth two denarius, and they would be equal to the amount of an adult Jewish man's annual tax that he had to pay at the temple. And so when he would go up to the temple, he might have come in from Greece, he might have come in from Rome, he might have come in from Damascus, or he might have just lived right there in Jerusalem. But when he goes up to the temple, unless he had a Tyrian shekel in his pocket, so to speak, to pay the tax with, it wasn't accepted. Not for the tax. Now, he could give that free will offering of that coin. He could give any coin he wanted in the free will offering into the treasury. like that time when Jesus was watching the people giving the money at the treasury in the temple and saw the widow come and give the two very small coins all she had to live on. They'd take any coin into the general treasury, but to pay the temple tax, you had to have the Tyrian shekel. And it would actually had marked on it YHD, or we'd say JUD. It was actually minted right on the coin, which meant Judea. So it was a special coin just for Judea and was used for the temple tax. In their world, people carried a wide variety of different coins or came in contact with them. There was Roman coinage, there was Greek coinage, there was some of the local coinages, including this Tyrian shekel that was used at the temple and so forth. But they had established pretty much a standard exchange rate between all of these. And that's why I reproduced at the end of this article for you on the bottom of page 4, the article out of the Bible Dictionary about money changers. Remember when Jesus goes up to the temple and he sees those who were selling doves and pigeons and those who were selling sacrificial animals and the money changers? And it says that he drove out the ones who were selling the things and he overturned the money tables of the money changers. Those people were there exchanging foreign money for the Tyrian shekel so people could pay their temple tax. And because they had a captive audience, people who got that far and still didn't have a Tyrian shekel, they got an atrocious exchange rate. I mean, it wasn't like that was just a customer courtesy kind of thing. This was actually a scam. This was actually where they were taking gross advantage of these people who were there only to show their devotion to God and pay their taxes and do what was right. And here they've been taken advantage of. And that's part of the reason Jesus was so upset with them. Not just that they were in the temple, but they had turned the temple into a house of robbers, he said. You see? Because it was so unfair what they were doing. Well, as we read through the Gospels in particular, I could think of and could find references to four different measures of money that were used by the Romans. The most basic one was the denarius. That was sort of the basis of everything. Just like in our modern American culture, the basis of everything for us is the dollar, isn't it? You got a dollar, then you got a quarter, which there's four to the dollar. You've got a nickel that's 20 to the dollar. You've got the penny that's 100 to the dollar. You've got the $5 bill, the $10 bill, the $20 bill, the 50, the 100, the 1,000. But they're all based on the dollar, aren't they? You all start with a dollar. Well, in Roman money system, they started with the denarius. And then when you went down to smaller amounts of money from there, they had what was called the asarion in the Greek language, but I think depending on which translation you use, it's often just referred to as a copper coin. But the copper coin was 1/16th of a denarius in value. So it took 16 of them to be equal to one denarius. And then they had one even smaller than that called the penny or the quadrantis, and it was worth 1/4 of the copper coin. Don't lose me now, because if you have this denarius, then you have this smaller amount of money called the copper coin, which 16 of them made a denarius. And then you had the quadrantis, or the penny. We often have it translated in our translations that it took 64 of them to make a denarius. All right? Then you go up the other way. From the denarius, you had the talent. When it talks about the man calling in his servants, and he gave one 5 talents and another one 2 talents and another one 1 talent, he's not passing out gifts or abilities there. He's passing out amounts of money. And a talent, it's believed, and the evidence they have is that in New Testament times, a talent was worth 6,000 denarius, or 6,000 denarii. So, you got all these numbers, 6,000 denarii, 1/16th of a denarius, 1/64th of a denarius. How much was a denarius? Well, the clue is in the story we read at the beginning. The denarius was one day's pay for a day worker or a common soldier in the Roman army. Now, the soldiers had the extra advantage in that they also got to eat without having to buy it out of their one denarius they got paid every day. The army also fed them and usually clothed them and armed them as well. But a denarius was an average day worker's one day's wage. And to me, the easiest way for me to grasp that then is to just think about what is a day worker's pay today? If we were to go downtown here in the morning in Odessa, and I'm sure there'd be some fellows down there, most of them would probably be speaking Spanish as their first language, and we wanted some of them to come and work in our yard or garden or do something else for us for the day, we could pick them up. What should be expected that we'd pay them for the day? I'm not saying what people sometimes abusively do pay them. We should expect to pay them at least minimum wage, wouldn't you think? $5.85 an hour. And in our culture, it's not always limited to that, but you normally think at least someone who's regularly employed, that should mean 8 hours pay. $5.85 times 8 hours a day is about $46. And so in sort of equivalent monies, a denarius in today's market would be about the same as, you know, between $40 and $50. So that's a pretty good sized coin. I mean, about the biggest thing any of us carry around, and very few of us do that anymore, is the dollar coin. But here's a coin that was worth $40 to $50. Well, they didn't have paper money. And so this is how coins were their money, the only money they had. So you got this denarius that's worth about $45, $50. So then you have this smaller coin called the copper coin that's worth 1/16 of that. So that would mean it'd be worth about $3. That's actually more than most people would have thought. Jesus mentions that particular coin twice. In Matthew chapter 10, he says, "Don't two sparrows sell for a small copper coin in the marketplace?" I have no idea what they were selling sparrows for. I don't think the Jews could eat them, and I don't think they kept them for pets like parakeets or something. So I'm not sure why he mentions them selling the sparrows in the marketplace. And in another place, in Luke 12, he talks about, don't they sell 5 sparrows for 2 pennies? It looks like if you buy more, you get a better deal. But either way, the coin he's talking about there is a coin that was worth, in our money today, about the equivalent of $3. And also that very, very small coin that was mentioned, referred to only once, the Roman coin by that. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount that if someone has something against you or you need something you need to take advantage of, you need to do it before they get you to court. Remember that? That's sort of an uncomfortable passage. We don't quite know what to do with it sometimes. But in Matthew 5 and 25, it says, "Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny, the last 1/64th of a denarius of your debt." That coin he mentions there would be about our equivalent of somewhere between a 50-cent piece to a 75-cent piece, which we don't even have in our money system. But Jesus says you need to take care of matters like this. Just some pretty practical advice, actually, he's giving, because apparently their government worked just like ours does today. You know, when you go down to pay a traffic fine or a ticket or something else, if the fine is $21.35, I've yet to find the clerk, or maybe it's just your license plates, or I just had to renew my driver's license. You know, $24, driver's license. Well, you know, if I'd have showed up and just had $23, do you think the clerk would have said, that's all right, we'll take 23, that's okay. I don't think it works that way. And if my license plates, which I had to renew last, November or something like that, it was something like $51.25. Now, I could have said to the lady when I'm writing out my check, I said, "Can I just make it out for $51? I'm sure she would have said yes. as long as you give me a quarter as well. You know, that's the way it works when you get to that point, isn't it? And that's what Jesus is saying. That if you let it go that far, they're going to exact everything exactly you owe. Even if it's the very smallest Roman coin that was minted. Now, those were Roman coins. The penny, 1/64 of a denarius. The copper coin, 1/16 of a denarius. The denarius, a day's wage. And the talent, 6,000 denarii. So all of a sudden, how much does that amount to? A talent then, 6,000 times $40. I think we're talking about something like $250,000 for one talent. Somewhere between $240,000 and $300,000 in equivalent money value today. And so when this landowner or this master calls in his servant and says, here's 5 talents, I want you to go out and put to work for me. We're talking about a man who's a millionaire putting some of the men who worked for him to work. No wonder he wanted it back. Another one he gives $500,000 to, 2 talents, and one he gives $250,000 to. And then when he comes back, he calls them to account to see what they've done with his money while he was gone. Well, that's Roman money. We do find a couple of coins from the Greeks being mentioned in the Bible because that was also being circulated in Bible times. The basic Greek unit of money was called the drachma. Again, if we just read in our Bible dictionary article here, that's where I'm getting this information from, here and others like it. You'll find it was a drachma. The drachma was roughly equivalent to the denarius. Okay. So, you know, a drachma, a day's wage, denarius, a day's wage. About the same amount. Pretty close to the same value. But we find them mentioned in a couple of places. For example, in Matthew 17, here we are in Matthew and his particular interest in money. In Matthew 17, in verse 24, it says, after Jesus and his disciples arrived in Capernaum, the collectors of the 2 drachma tax, this is the NIV, the 2 drachma tax came to Peter and asked, doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax? So there was this didrachma, it was actually in the Greek language, 2 drachma coin, worth twice as much as a drachma. And the Tyrian version of that, which we mentioned earlier, was the temple shekel. It was the same value. But they've come to Jesus and Peter, and they've asked Peter, it says, doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax? Was Jesus guilty of tax evasion? No. I think probably they're asking this question because they have noticed that Jesus didn't pay that much attention to the temple. For most of the Jews, everything they believed and everything that was of holy to them revolved around the temple. And it didn't seem to be that way with Jesus. He talked a lot more about a direct relationship with God and about a holy life and treating other people right instead of talking about all those things that happened up there at the temple all the time, sacrifices and holy days and those kind of things. So they come and said, what, y'all don't pay the temple tax of 2 drachma? Which would be the same as 2 denarius, $80. Every year, every Jewish male who was considered a man was required to pay. He wouldn't be arrested if he didn't because the Jews didn't have the power right then to arrest him for that. But he was expected to pay this tax once a year. And there was a tax roll that was kept. You went to a certain place, and when you paid that tax, you gave it to the man, and he wrote your name down in the book. And you were good for another year. Temple tax. 2 drachma. And that's what they say here. Doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax? Yes, he does, he replied. That was Peter's answer to the man inquiring. And when Peter came into the house, Jesus was the first to speak. What do you think, Simon? He asked. From whom do the kings of the earth collect duty and taxes? From their own sons or from others? From others, Peter answered. Then the sons are exempt, Jesus said to him. Jesus is just referring to something else they were common in their history. Herod does not tax his own sons. He taxed everybody else, but his sons didn't have to pay taxes. And so he says that to him. And probably the truth of the matter is, Peter knows as well as Jesus does it right then, they don't have a pfennig to their name. You know, they're broke. And yet here these fellows are saying, hey, it's time to pay the temple tax. Aren't y'all going to pay it? You know, it's going to be $80 for you, Peter, and it's going to be $80 for your master, Jesus. And Jesus says in verse 27, but so that we may not offend them, go to the lake and throw out your line. Take the first fish you catch, open its mouth, and you will find a 4-drachma coin. Take it and give it to them for my tax and for yours. So there's a 4-drachma coin. And they got the tax money by catching a fish. You see? And we're talking about a pretty considerable amount of money. I mean, between the two of them, it'd be about $160 to $180 in our modern money we're talking about. And yet that's how they got the money, was Jesus at least knew that Peter would catch a fish that had the money in the mouth. Whether Jesus made the money be there or how he knew it would be there, I don't know. But see, it all revolves around knowing something about that money. And it wasn't a penny or a nickel. This was a considerable amount of money. And this was the Greek drachma. And then in Luke 19, and we're going to let Luke get in on telling a story here. In Luke 19, we find another version of what we might call the parable of the talents, only it doesn't involve talents this time. It involves a Greek measure of money. It says in Luke 19:11, while they were listening to this, he went on to tell them a parable because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. And he said, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back. So he calls 10 of them and he gives them 10 minas. The text is telling us here that each one of them got one. How much was a mina? Jeanette has an ant mina, but I don't think that's the same thing. What is a mina? A mina, according to our Bible dictionary article right here, was equal to 100 drachma. It was a Greek measure of money, not Roman. So if a drachma was one day's wages, then it was 100 drachma, or a mina would be 100 days' wages, worth about $4,000 to $5,000. That's a pretty good, nice coin to carry around in your pocket. I think I would carry it with both hands over my pocket if I had that much in there. And yet that's how much each one of them was given, and then they're called to account when he comes back as to what they did with it. And a very similar story then as to the one with the talents, where they even got much larger amounts, $250,000 and up. Okay, so what's the point in all of this? The point is, by getting a concept of what this money is and how much it's worth, we're seeing that Jesus is using things they were very familiar with, we're totally unfamiliar with, to teach his lessons. When he sees the lady at the temple giving the two small mites, I think the King James Version says, the word there in the Greek language is actually the word lepton. The lepton was neither a Roman coin nor a Greek coin. It was one of only two Jewish coins we know about, the shekel being the other. But a lepton was actually a Jewish coin, and it was their smallest coin. And in equivalent value, it was worth, two of them was worth 1 quadrantis. We said a while ago that the penny or the quadrantis in Roman money was 1/64th of a denarius. And so that meant a lepton that she gave was 1/128. It's worth less than 50 cents. Now, I can remember as a boy being amazed to watch elderly ladies in the church I grew up in open up their little change purses. You know, they seemed to often have those little purses that had a little snap on the top, you know, and they'd open it up. And as the contribution was being taken, they'd come by them, they'd reach into that little purse and pull out $1 or $2. And put in to the collection plate. And we all knew that they were just living on the bare minimum. Their husbands had passed away. Social Security wasn't paying nearly as well then as it does now. And it doesn't pay well now. And maybe they weren't even getting Social Security. Maybe they were just trying to live on what was left from the estate that her husband left when they died. And yet here they were putting in proportionately much more generously than many others in the church were. And that's what Jesus is seeing here. This lady puts in a dollar, 2 50-cent pieces, all she had left to live on until wherever her source of income came, until that came around again. She gave all she had and then trusted God that He would take care of her until she next received her little pension, or her children gave her the allowance they gave her, or wherever her money came from. Such a small amount, even less than those $2 I often saw those elderly widow ladies give. Okay, let me just jog your memory then about some others. I'll just sort of move through these quickly. When the Good Samaritan stopped and helped the man on the road between Jerusalem and Jericho, he takes him and he binds up his wounds, he cleans him up, does all he can for him, puts him on his own donkey and carries him on down to Jericho and stops at an inn, a place there, and takes care of him. Then when he has to leave the next day, he gives the innkeeper 2 denarii to pay for the continual care of that man, $80. It was far more than a room cost in the inns at those times. This man was very generous, not just with his time and effort, but with his own money to help someone he didn't even know. No wonder we call him the Good Samaritan. No wonder the Jewish religious leaders, when they heard this story, were offended, because the two Jewish religious leaders who had seen the man laying on the side of the road carefully avoided him and went on their way, while this man was more than generous in taking care of a Jew. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus was sold for 30 denarii, pieces of silver. So, you know, about $1,200 to $1,500 is what Judas got. But he didn't enjoy the benefit of that, did he? He brought it back and threw it back in their faces. But that's what he sold Jesus for, $1,200 to $1,500. When they brought the question to Jesus about whether they should pay taxes to Caesar, he just held up the denarius. He asked, did someone have one? He didn't. But he said, does someone have a denarius? Someone did. He borrowed it for a moment. He held up and said, whose picture's on it? Well, they all knew whose picture was on it. Caesar's. He said, then give Caesar what belongs to him. It's got his picture on it. It must be his. Give it to him. And they had an annual tax that they, on top of all their other taxes, they had an annual tribute tax that they paid to Caesar. That was 1 denarius every year. And that's what they were asking him about. The other gospel accounts just say the tax. Matthew goes ahead and said it was the tribute tax. He even distinguished which kind it was. When Jesus was going to feed the 5,000, he told the disciples, first, all these people need food, and they come to Jesus and says, how are we going to feed them? And he says, you feed them. He says, they said it'll take more than 200 denarii to buy enough bread just to give everyone a little bit. 200 denarii, 200 days' wages. When Jesus was about to be arrested and crucified, the woman came with a perfume and breaks it and pours it over him. And some of the disciples are critical, saying that perfume was so valuable it could be taken and sold for 300 denarii. $12,000, $15,000. I think that beats anything that, they sell down here at Bell's or Walmart for value of perfume. $12,000 to $15,000 that one container of perfume could have been sold for. That was their estimate, at least, of it. And the one that really sticks out in my mind the most, because it means the most to me, is in Matthew 18, where Jesus tells the story of a man who's called in to give an account and to pay back what he owes. Matthew 18:23, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that they had be sold to repay the debt. How much did he owe? 10,000 talents. Now, one talent was 6,000 denarii. So I'm just doing the math here. That means he owed his master in our money today something like 60 million denarii. And each denarii was worth about $40 or more. And so that means that he owed, he owed roughly $2,400,000,000. You say, how in the world could a fella end up owing that much? Didn't they just catch a fella last week that managed to waste $7 billion of a bank's money in France? And they just arrested him for gross negligence? He doesn't have a penny of it, probably. He just wasted it all on behalf of the bank in bad investments. $2.4 billion or more this man owed. And since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. And the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. How in the world was he going to do that? I doubt he would ever make that much money in an entire lifetime, no matter what he did. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Now, here's a man who's just been forgiven 60 million denarii debt. And he walks out and sees another fellow who owes him 100 denarii. About $4,000. If I saw somebody that owed me $4,000, I'd be asking them when are they going to pay me back too. But it goes beyond that, doesn't it? He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I cancel all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart. My sin towards God is so great that it doesn't make any difference what you have done to me. It's just a mere pittance as compared to what I've done to God. And He's forgiven me. Surely I can find it in my heart to forgive you. That's what Jesus is saying. 60 million denarii, 100 denarii. That's the contrast Jesus is drawing between our sin before God and the sins and errors and failings that our brothers and sisters have toward us. That's my sermon on money. If we understand a little bit about this, we don't have to have that all in our mind all the time. It really helps illustrate what is really going on as Jesus teaches these things. And relatively speaking, when Jesus is throwing out numbers like 100 denarii, 200 denarii for bread, $300 denarii for perfume, 6,000 denarii given out as talents to men to go out and invest it, and then for Judas to only settle for 30 denarii to sell Jesus out, boy, how little he thought of Jesus. Not that any amount would have been justified to be a traitor, but he only took 30 denarii. He paid a far greater debt for us. We have an invitation song that reminds us of that and gives us the opportunity to do anything we need to get right with Him.